Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Gray Matter. Well, it isn't unusual for us to be accused of courting conspiracy theories, although I must note that it seems as though everything that begins as a tinfoil hat conspiracy theory comes true in about 3 to 6 months. And it would appear that what we're going to be talking about today falls squarely within that category of story. We have a guest on who is going to be able to tell us a very intriguing story of something that happened to him that was disclosed to the media, but which has been buried. And so we're hoping to revive that conversation, go into it in more detail, and let you decide for yourself what it all means. So our guest today is Dr. Robert McCarter, and he is going to be talking to us about evidence, anecdotal evidence at least, that's supported by things that we now know to be true 3 years on, in support of what is generally called the Great Reset. And so we're going to spend some time talking about this. In fact, hopefully dive into some considerable detail and get Bob's thoughts on it. But before we go there, as we always do, we're going to start with our aphorisms of the day. And again, as always, these are chosen in honor of our guest and the topic in that order. The first one is from Dr. Patrick Moore, who's a co-founder of Greenpeace, provided an early warning of this covert socialist campaign in a piece called Hard Choices for the Environmental Movement, The Rise of Eco-Extremism in 1994. Dr. Moore wrote, surprisingly enough, the second event that caused the environmental movement to veer to the left was the fall of the Berlin Wall. Suddenly, the international peace movement had a lot less to do. Pro-Soviet groups in the West were discredited. Many of their members moved into the environmental movement, bringing with them their eco-Marxism and pro-Sandinista sentiments. Second quotation is from an American astronaut named Harrison Schmitt, who was quoted as saying this: the global warming scare is being used as a political tool to increase government control over American lives, incomes, and decision-making. It has no place in the society's activities. With that, I heartily agree. And the third one is not necessarily a quotation, but it's an interesting anecdote from history. I'm going to read this headline, and you'll be shocked to hear when it was written. The headline is from the Jefferson City Post-Tribune. And the headline reads, melting glaciers would flood Earth's big cities. It reads, just raise the average temperature of the Earth 2 or 3 degrees, and you can bid goodbye to all the big cities on the Earth. Sound familiar? Glaciers will melt and oceans will rise, and one could still be dry above the 155th floor level in cities with skyscrapers, but all about would be the bounding waves. New York, London, Paris, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, Toronto, Washington, Shanghai, all gone. That sounds like that could have been written yesterday. However, it was in the Jefferson City Post-Tribune on the 2nd of May, 1932. That's 32, folks, 90 years ago. So who do we have on the show today? Well, we have Robert McCarter. He is a retired science teacher living on Vancouver Island. He has a BSc Honours in Zoology from the University of Western Ontario and a Master's in Science from the University of Guelph in Environmental Psychology. We're told that he pursued a PhD in the secret lives of ground squirrels, but he decided just to stop digging. So, Robert, Bob, thanks very much for being on Gray Matter today.
Okay, just a couple of things to clear up. I'm not a doctor, or a master's degree. And this is not a conspiracy theory.
No, but it's called that by, yeah, it's called that by many though, isn't it? But
it's an escape. It's a way, yeah. It's a quick rebuttal, unthinking rebuttal to get out of looking at some very, very nasty things that are going on in the world.
Sure. Sort of like calling somebody a racist when you don't want to listen to
exactly
what they have to say.
One word put down. And right. How do you respond?
It's sort of like calling someone a conspiracy theorist is sort of like calling them a racist. It's a way of slapping a label on them so you don't have to listen to
that's their right. ideas. And anybody who isn't part of the argument immediately puts that label on and decides not to listen.
Right, exactly. Which is really part of the problem in our society. I expect you'll agree with me in that, I guess I shouldn't say that. I hope you'll agree with me that this is one of the problems we have in our discussion, our intellectual discourse in this country and elsewhere, that we can't seem to have civil disagreements anymore and have discussions where we disagree and we debate without descending into these ad hominem attacks on each other. And so the old idea that we're going to distill the best ideas and come to some conclusions about them is really gone. We can't have people who are sitting on the left and right, let's say, of a particular or pro and con of a debate. We can't have sort of discussions civilly about things that we disagree upon, because it seems every disagreement is taken personally. And this is part of the problem in our discourse today, isn't it?
I've lost friends over this, just having a different opinion.
Yeah.
And that the opinion is not debated rationally. It's immediately assumed that I'm some sort of whack job, as you said at the early part, the tinfoil hat, left mine at home. But it's, I've lost friends, and it's been a very sad thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have a friend that I used to have long debates with. Well, we ended up on two sides of the issue. He was very much looking at the Atlantic Magazine and New York Times, and I was looking elsewhere for my information, and it drove a great division between us. And I actually think a large part of the division is the media. The media is taking a one point of view only and not really airing the other points. And so you end up with divisions. People can quickly point to, well, the CBC said this. Well, yeah, but they were lying. Oh, maybe I shouldn't use the word lying, but they were omitting a bunch of things.
Well, that's a great segue into the sort of the heart of our topic, the heart of darkness, if you will. So let's go back a few years now to September of 2019. I found an article that was published by somebody named Malcolm Carter. It was entitled, "Be Careful Who You Vote For." And it said this, said, "Not everything in politics is easily understood or even meant to be understood. However, some things are more obscure than others." And he posits, why, for example, does the Trudeau government have a seemingly schizophrenic attitude towards our economy? On the one hand, like other parties, they voice the need for wages, benefits, jobs, health services, education, protection of the environment, all the wonderful benefits of an industrial society. But on the other hand, they seem to be trying to stick it to Alberta. So that's pre-COVID. That seemed to be the beginnings of something. And then I saw another piece, and this is one we'll get you to comment on this one. The Liberals' Covert Green Plan for Canada, Poverty and Dictatorship, written by somebody named Alan M. R. McRae. I understand you are intimately familiar with the contents of this, and you talked to Mr. McRae about it. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Okay, I'm outed as Malcolm Carter. That's
I would have guessed that, but I didn't want to put the label on.
Okay, and that's fine. At the time, I was leery about this, but we hadn't gone nearly into the depths we have now of madness. And so now I've got to come out as myself and just say what little I know about this. I did get in conversation with Alan McRae. We met on a website and finally met together this summer. We went out, my wife and I drove out to Regina and stopped in Calgary to see Alan on the way. Mm-hmm. And so, we've got a long-term now a webmail relationship.
He published this piece, again, 3 years ago, and he describes you in it as a highly credible gentleman, and he called you an insider. I know you don't subscribe to that term, but he said that you had been working on an advisory group to the Trudeau government, and the group was not formed to discuss. Sorry, go ahead.
not me. I'm not the insider. I had the conversation with the insider.
Who shall remain nameless, right?
He has to remain nameless. Okay. I might have to change that opinion at some point, but no, I'm not the insider. I'm okay. The whistleblower from a dinner that we had.
Okay. Let's say that this is based upon the information that you provided from the insider. And it says that there was an advisor group to the Trudeau government. The group was not formed to discuss policy for the five-year horizon that governments are usually interested in, but to develop policies for the further future, 20 to 40 years out. Implication was that the group had concluded that the present economic model was flawed and had to be replaced. Presumably that's capitalism. Unregulated consumerism was unsustainable and people would have to learn to make do with less. The government would have to have more control over people to enforce their austerity, and the wealth of developed nations would have to be redistributed to help underdeveloped nations. And so this was ostensibly released in 2019. And then there was another piece that arose that was reported in October of 2020 when we were in the grips of the pandemic. And the story arose again at that time in the context of a supposedly roadmap and aim was set out by the Prime Minister's office as follows. And this sort of ties in with the COVID. Phase in secondary lockdown restrictions on a rolling basis, which happened. Rush the acquisition of isolation facilities, which happened. Daily new cases of COVID-19 will surge beyond capacity of testing, which happened. Complete and total secondary lockdown, which happened. Reform and expansion of the unemployment program to be transitioned to the universal basic income.
They tried.
Projected COVID-19 mutation and or co-infection with secondary virus.
Oh, yeah. They predicted and named it at that point.
Yeah. Daily new cases of COVID-21 hospitalizations and COVID-19 and COVID-21 related deaths will exceed medical care facilities capacity. We heard about that. Enhanced lockdown restrictions, or the third lockdown, which occurred. Transition of individuals into the universal basic income. Projected supply chain breakdowns. That sounds familiar. Inventory shortages. Large economic instability, which we're living through right now. And then the last part was deployment of military personnel into major metropolitan areas, as well as all major roadways to establish travel checkpoints, which happened in some places. Well, how are these stories in terms of COVID-19 and your insider story connected, Bob, or are they connected?
That I think they are. First of all, my story is just very brief. If it had not been for the fact that this fellow was a senior military officer who I knew well, wasn't prone to telling a story. He was actually maybe flaunting a little bit about, yes, I'm important, I'm in this group, because I was teasing him a bit about going off in another NGO in a distant country, and just asking him what he'd been doing lately. So I think he was with a little bit of pride saying he was in this group that was meeting ostensibly with Trudeau. That was mentioned. It was Trudeau's group that was looking into changing Canada forever, but a 20 to 40 year horizon at that point. So I told that story, and it has all, again, if you did a checklist on what it was said there, the idea of putting strictures on Canadians, the cutting off of the petroleum, it's another checklist that I can go through in retrospect and say, yeah, it's happened. He's been working on this. Then in October 2020, which is just almost exactly a year later, a year and a month or two later, this article came out in a very obscure little Western Times or something. And yet it clicked. It was ostensibly by a Liberal insider, actually part of the a committee that had been formed by the PMO, the Prime Minister's Office, to look at essentially using the COVID crisis as a way of leveraging future changes. And he's written it up. He's written it up anonymously. At the time, it was it was put out there as, what do you think about this? Is it real or not? And a lot of people dismissed it. A lot of people never heard of it. I looked at it and thought, my gosh, that really connects with what I had heard from the military officer earlier. And so I was primed and ready to listen to other things like the Great Reset. So when that information started coming out, Trudeau talking about such an opportunity to take the Great Reset, which I think happened prior to that, and then his connection with Klaus Schwab and that group, it all started to connect. Sounded very, very conspiratorial. I brought it up with Alan a couple of times. I brought it up with Brian Peckford a couple of times. Not a lot of take on that, but I just kept looking at it. And over the last year or so, this has really evolved so that a lot of people are now aware that at the heart of things is a global elitist group that is pulling a lot of levers, using COVID as a strategy for leverage, now trying to change it to something else. They've probably tried monkeypox. They've tried a bunch of other ways. I think this war in Ukraine is part of that too. It's another leveraging of this global government. And it certainly seems very strange to me. And I can't say I know the answers. All I know is a lot of detail that seems to point in that direction of a global conspiracy. But it's not a theory. It's becoming more of a theorem, an actuality.
Well, I want to go into a little bit of detail about what you heard from this military person. So part of it is what we now know as the Great Reset has been in the works for a while. And you say you first learned of this back in August of 2019 when you had a chance dinner conversation with a senior officer in the Canadian military. And you say, while waiting to load up our plates, I asked what he'd been doing in Ottawa between stints with NGOs and embassies. He told me he'd been working on an advisory group to the Trudeau government. And this is when this agenda about the development of a new, let's call it a great reset, new world order. Yes, a new world order. Over 20 to 40 years out, he explained to you, expecting you to agree, that Canada's present economic model was seriously flawed and had to be replaced. And you say that you bit your tongue, he continued. And then he went on to explain why the current model had to be replaced. And what did he say about that?
Well, I was pretty flabbergasted, and the way he was describing it is that Canadians were going to have to expect less out of life and roll back, and the wealth of nations was going to have to be redistributed to other nations. This just seems to me to be extremely socialistic, to the point where I thought that it was going to cause immense harm. And I said to him that thousands of people will die. And that ended the conversation. And if I'd thought it through a little bit more, if it hadn't taken me by surprise, I wish I had cultivated the conversation longer so that I had a little more detail. But certainly, to me, it was an affront to us. It was it made me afraid for the future of my grandchildren. Now it's the fear of my children and myself, because it's the whole timeline seems to have been brought up. And I think that COVID was the opportunity, as said by Trudeau exactly, it's an opportunity for a great reset. Mm-hmm. And I think what he did is he took this plan that was already in the works before 2019, and he's just brought it from 20 to 40 years out to 1 or 2 years out. And it's, I think the original timeline was to have the military brought in October of last year, I think it was, or December of last year, somewhere like that. Mm-hmm. And so the timeline has gone a little long. I'm hoping the timeline will continue without getting us into warfare, because I think this has gone far beyond just Canada. I think the same similar pattern is working its way through the United States, working its way through Europe. And I think you're going to see huge problems in Europe this year. I think this probably right now is one of the most dangerous times we've ever lived in, is this 1 month before the elections in the United States. And then the more dangerous times than that may be the 2 months that we're waiting until the government changes over, if it does, in the States. I think that is really dangerous times. And I don't think I've got my tinfoil hat on.
This, by analogy, Bob, this almost seems like, you know, that you met up with a military officer who might have attended the Wannsee conference before coming to a dinner party. And in just raising what was talked about at the Wannsee conference at a casual dinner conversation, expecting someone who wasn't at the Wannsee conference to readily agree with what was talked about around the table there. I don't want to overstate it, but, you know, the Wannsee conference, you know, in Berlin, where they talked about the final solution that they put into effect. This is the conference that the Nazi inner circle had, and I believe in 1941 outside of Berlin. You know, and so he's expecting you to just sort of say, oh, yes, well, this makes perfect sense. Of course, this is so rational, but inhumane. But in any event, you took this to be more than just casual dinner conversation. You took this very seriously. And you wondered why a military officer would be attending sort of clandestine meetings that sounded like they to use your words, leapt from the pages of the Leap Manifesto. Which is Naomi Klein's Marxist blueprint, using the irrational fears of climate change to leverage an austere lifestyle onto overconsumptive Canadians. So what was it that you found so shocking and horrifying about this about this conversation?
I think you just said it.
Yeah? Okay.
It seems to look at general average Canadians as the enemy. That we overconsumptive right. bastards, and that we were going to that we were destroying the world. Well, here Canada is one of the least densely populated countries in the world, one with great wealth, should be a leader in the world in many, many ways, and we're trying to strangle us. It seems economically we're cutting off petroleum, which I mean it's paying the bills, and mm-hmm. and they're cutting it off. There are also these plans to, and using climate change as one of the arguments, to move money to third world countries. Well, moving money to third world countries, I think, actually ends up in, okay, this is just my conspiracy theory, but ends up in Swiss banks, okay? Mm-hmm. And I don't think it gets to the people. That's what I think we should be doing is hand out, you know, hand up rather than a handout, okay? That old phrase of not giving away money. I think it's spent poorly. I think that if we worked together with these poor countries, I think we'd do a lot better. In fact, this is what's going on. And if you look at, say, our world in data, you'll notice that poverty has been dropping quite rapidly over the last several years. And that's being done with what we would call a capitalistic system. Development of wealth through the very ambitions of people to get wealthy. I guess that's a paraphrase of it. And that seems to me to be so innate, so natural to us that we want to look after our own. We want to look after the quality of our lives, of ourselves and our descendants and the people we call friends and the people we call neighbors, that should be the driving force, not some bureaucrat in some high office saying, you get out there and work and we'll take your money and we'll send it overseas to some dictator who is going to line his accounts and buy a fancy yacht with gold bath faucets, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We could help a lot of people, that is, Canada could help a lot of people in Germany, for example, by selling them clean energy, which our prime minister has nixed out of hand without even talking to the Premier of Alberta.
All right. I think that a lot of the policies, from the climate change policies and the absurd fears we have of sea level rise, of temperature change, which is extremely minor, and the CO2, yes, maybe we should be getting that under control, but that's a 200-year problem. It's not a 30-year problem, and we got 200 years. It's a very minor constituent of our atmosphere. I think that a lot of the policies that we're seeing driven like this are to destabilize our civilizations of the West. Mm-hmm. The idea of cutting off CO2 emissions so that we can, what, kill Germans? That seems to be what's going to be happening, I'm afraid. The British are now paying, what, 68, I think it's American cents, which are very close now to euros, or euro cents, but for a kilowatt hour of electricity. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not going to harm Prince Charles one bit. Mm-hmm. King Charles, sorry. It's going to hurt all of the poor I lived a year in England. The lady I lived with at the time decided that she couldn't stand wearing jumpers all the time, sweaters. So she put the heat up for 1 month, January, and we lived toasty warm for 1 month. I paid the bill and couldn't go traveling after that. The single bill was something like £1,200. It was just an amazing sum. And now, and that was at 20 pence per kilowatt hour. Now you're looking at much higher rates. And yeah. So that was on a teacher's salary. So what are people with other jobs going to do? What are the retired going to do? They're going to be desperate this year. And we're counting angels on pins. That's the sort of argument that we're worried about CO2. My God, it's so ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Well, I read one report that said that, speaking of England, that about 70% of the pubs are going to have to close over the winter because they won't be able to afford to stay open. One wonders how that's going to impact the social life of Britain. I know that's a cliche, but let's face it, that's a big part of their social culture.
Yes, it is.
Right. And so if we're talking about an attack on Western culture, that would be an example of it in Britain, wouldn't it?
Yes. And I think this is all planned. If you look at things like the war against GMOs, modified organisms, or the problem with pesticides, or problems that the left Greens are attacking, are at the heart of what would be the wealth of civilizations. They seem to attack those very things that will allow populations to be successful. They seem to ignore the fact that the population of Canada, if it wasn't for immigration, would be declining. Population of Europe, most countries, would be declining if it wasn't for immigration. And we've got our populations under control. This is not a population explosion problem, which is often what we're told it is. Mm-hmm. The population problem occurs in Africa and Southeast Asia for a large part. And as those countries are getting wealthier, they're getting their populations more and more in control. It seems to me that the wealth of nations will be our solution, not our problem. And yet these Greens, to have a label, seem to be treating wealth as the problem.
Mm-hmm. Hence Dr. Moore's quotation about, let's say, green, the green movement being basically rebranded red communism post 1990. So coming back to your encounter though, Bob, You said that about a year later, in October 2020, there was another leak of information from this cabal, one that gave it a name, the Strategic Planning Committee, a committee steered by the Prime Minister's office. And in this case, the whistleblower claimed to be a member within the Liberal Party of Canada, and despite being not happy doing this, gave his motivation as, quote, a better future, not only for my children, but for other children as well. This leak was quickly discredited, largely because it was anonymous. There was no other supporting evidence. However, the letter seemed to support your earlier dinner conversation about now the COVID-19 twist, and you write handily, the declared health emergency allowed economic reset timeline to be accelerated for decades to months. So therein lies this connection that you're talking about, yes, and that people like Klaus Schwab are talking about. So having said that, how is their plan going? What is your assessment of how things are going? I realize this is an opinion. Has it been destroyed, or has this plan temporarily slowed?
It's put on the back burner for a bit. Okay, if you really just want off the cuff speculation, I think Trudeau is an acolyte of Klaus Schwab. He doesn't seem, or I haven't seen him on the list of young leaders, but it's well known that Klaus Schwab accepts him as one of his own. All right, that said, right out of Klaus Schwab's mouth, I'm not inventing that. He also has gone on to say that more than 50% of the Canadian cabinet is owned essentially by
he used the word penetrated.
Penetrated.
Which connotes many things that much we can't talk about on this family show.
Yeah, is it a family show? Okay, I apologize. Okay, I think that Trudeau is an acolyte of this, and he's trying to prove his credentials with the global society. I think that his very association with this global group is a conflict of interest with his job as the Prime Minister of Canada. Mm-hmm. I am presuming that the people we elect in Canada are supposed to do what they can to better the situation of Canadians. Though I looked up what their what vow they make when they accept office, and it's they're making a vow to the Queen. Okay, and I'm not sure what that entails. Not a pledge of allegiance to the Canadian people, but I think that we have to take that as matter of fact, that it should be for Canadian people, not a pledge of allegiance to Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum to get Canada to join a global group, which will undermine mm-hmm. the wealth of Canadians. I really don't think that we voted them in on that basis. And yet mm-hmm. that's what I think is happening. So I think that with the truckers, that actually threatened to upset this, to get a general public response against Trudeau. He had to break it up, so he pulled any way he could, which was to call an emergency, of which it was not, a very thinly veiled lie. And he broke it up, and I think that trampling people under horses was not looked on well from other countries. A lot of people in other countries started to despise Trudeau. I mean, we never made the American news more often than during that time. And a lot of negative press for Trudeau. And I think he's been told to slow it down a bit. And I think mm-hmm. he has lately. He's now trying to regain a moral high ground, not in Canada, but he's jumped on all these cause celebs, such as the Iran rebellion that's going on right now, such as the, have another
supporting Taiwan,
anything that he can do that is external that makes mm-hmm. him look virtuous, and I suppose Canadians are falling for it. But here in Canada, We're still shutting down our, trying to shut down petroleum industries, shutting down our economics, trying to change over our energy to useless forms of wind power and solar, which may be useful in very limited circumstances, but you're not powering highly industrial nations with them, and you're not powering us through a cold, dark winter. Just try those things up in the Yukon. Mm-hmm. And yet we're trying to cut people off fuel oil. Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Well, you actually took the time to make up a checklist of these predictions. And many of them came true. The predictions of the Strategic Planning Committee, they included more rolling lockdowns, construction of isolation facilities, a transition to universal basic income, which was tried, a projected COVID mutation or new COVID 2021, which we've heard about, monkeypox or rose by any other name, presumption that cases would exceed medical care facilities, the imposition of interprovince interstate travel restrictions, supply chain breakdowns, economic stability, including inflation, by the end of 2021, which we've seen, and the deployment of military to establish checkpoints. Now, many of these came true, and although not every single one has worked out, and not for lack of trying by the Trudeau government. So my question for you is, peering into your crystal ball, what's next? What do you foresee happening in the next little while? You've said we're sort of in this, let's say, complacency period, where we're all supposed to get complacent and not be as suspicious of our government. What do you think they're planning for us next? They haven't given up their long-term 20 to 40-year plan, have they?
No, I really don't think they have. I think they're just cooled it down a bit, waiting until we've all forgotten this. Trudeau has 3 years to run, mm-hmm. okay, in office, should that happen. What I think has to happen is that he has to be pushed into an election much sooner so that the public can once again say what they want. I think there are avenues to that. One of the avenues is with Jagmeet Singh and getting him to stop supporting the Liberals. I can only think that's harming the NDP dreadfully. I used to vote NDP. I'm one of those guys, leftist, right? When I try to figure out what my own political left or right is, what I think I am is that I realize that not much happens without a robust economy. You can't have, you cannot have environmentalism, for example. You cannot have welfare. You cannot have medical support, health support systems without really robust economy. So I am what I call a fiscal conservative and a social liberal. Mm-hmm. I believe we have to help people. I don't believe, especially the way we've raised them now, and I shouldn't say that, but especially the way we've been working with people now, a lot of people are not going to be entrepreneurial enough to get out there and do their own thing. I think a lot of people are now confined to their basement on playing video games and not getting out there being part of the economy. I think we need to support the economy, start us supporting a major change in education, I think is absolutely critical. I think that getting our economy back on track and right at the heart of things is energy. I tend to be a big supporter of nuclear power. I know that's not favored by a lot of people, but I've done the math. I wrote a book recently on not a terribly great book, but one on radiation called Radiophobia. It's an Apple Store book, but the very idea is I wanted to do the research on how dangerous radiation is. And it's not particularly dangerous. And mm-hmm. yet for that fear, which is mainly just fear, we're denying ourselves an enormously energetic, powerful future. In the meantime, fossil fuels, particularly natural gas, is a huge blessing for Canada. And we're dumping CO2 into the atmosphere? Well, it's a very small rise over time, yes, and there is a rise over time. Whether it's all, humans add somewhere between 3 and 5% of the CO2 that actually enters the atmosphere. A large part of it is just the biology of the Earth, the degassing of the oceans. And when you look at it, that we're adding 3 to 5%, and the world exists in equilibrium systems where as the CO2 rises, more will dissolve in the oceans. There are certain controls in this. The forests will grow and absorb more CO2. If there is a CO2 rise of any great amount, it will be slow. The changes that we see will be small. I think we have to go fossil fuel until we can transition. And I think we're looking at a 200-year period over which we will do that. I think we need the economy, though. I think to do that, we have to get Trudeau out of office. I think he's so wedded to this idea of depopulation, not sure, but certainly control of population, that what we have to do is work on Jagmeet Singh, write letters to him, email him, tell him you're not going to vote for him again unless he mans up and gets out and goes back to the NDP principles. Okay?
That's a very promising view of the future, and I think a realistic one. There is this dystopian future, however, that you talk about that seems to be the Trudeau plan, and that is to design an effective way of transitioning Canadians to meet an unprecedented economic endeavor, one that would change the face of Canada forever and alter the lives of Canadians. And that this would be using funding from the IMF, that is, the federal government will offer to eliminate all personal debts in exchange for forfeiture of all property and assets forever, and an agreement to partake in the COVID-19 vaccination schedule. And this would allow them unrestricted travel, unrestricted living, even under a full lockdown, using something called the Canada Health Pass. And the committee members were told, the World Debt Reset Program will handle all the details of property and asset ownership. That seems to be their destination point, not this much more prosperous and free Canada that you're talking about. I prefer your, leftist or not, I prefer your vision to Mr. Trudeau's.
Yeah, and there's an image that Elon Musk posted, but it was posted by some other person before that who did it up, and it was me standing still, and the left racing so far left that the center point is now the center point is now to my left, so I'm to the right, but I'm sort of staying where I was. Fiscal right. Conservative, social liberal, okay? Mm-hmm. And I used to think that the NDP was fiscal enough, okay, with some terrible mistakes, but I will never vote for them again, not with what they have done, abandoning the working Canadian, as it were, and using this, well, I mean, the pretense is to get in the dental plan, but the support of the Trudeau government is really a way of bringing in a socialistic paradise, I think. And when you start talking about common ownership or the elite ownership of property, you're talking about maybe not communism, but an elitism that harkens back to the nobility of the 1800s before the Great War, okay? And I don't think any of us want to go there, but can you imagine the privileged class that can fly about in their private jets, that can take the luxury cruises to around the world, whereas all we plebs stay at home. Okay, I remember when I first became aware there was this opinion. I my father had a friend. We were out bird watching. I was a young kid, he said, the friend said, "You know, Alec, these beaches were so much better in the old days when there were when there was only you on them, that other people couldn't drive to them." You know, and I'm thinking, what a And here I am, I'm probably 16, and I'm thinking, what an elite thing to say. He's remembering how wonderful it was in a world where only he could drive to the beaches and no one else could, because he's rich and no one else was. And I remember that time from the 50s when we were kids and we'd be able to get out to the beach and hardly anyone was there because we did have a car. There's so many people who didn't have cars or didn't have the time to get out to the beach. Yeah, there are a heck of a lot more people in Hawaii now, but isn't that a good thing?
Well, depending on your view of the world, I'm more in your camp than the elitist one. That's for sure. So here's how you've got this conclusion to the letter, and I want to read this if you don't mind. So, letter concludes. So, as you can imagine, after hearing all this, it turned into quite the heated discussion, escalated beyond anything I've ever witnessed before. In the end, it was implied by the PMO that the whole agenda will move forward no matter who agrees with it or not, that it won't just be Canada, but in fact, all nations will have similar roadmaps and agendas, that we need to take advantage of the situations before us to promote change on a grander scale for the betterment of everyone. Of course, evil, the worst evil is done for the benefit of everyone, right? The members who were opposed and ones who brought up key issues that would arise from such a thing were completely ignored. Our opinions and concerns were ignored. We were simply told to just do it. All I know is that I don't like it. I think it's going to place Canadians into a dark future. And so you're right. Stop and consider. This is all outrageous. But there it is in black and white, especially for the Great Reset skeptics. We can corroborate all this by connecting the dots to what is readily available from the recent past. So here's what I want to know from you, Bob. Having experienced this, having up close and personal experience of somebody who is in on the inside of these meetings, how do we stop this? How do we as everyday Canadians, what can we do to prevent this quote unquote great reset from actually occurring?
Well, I've tried protests. I'm a hermit of a person, but I was out with my placards and going to protests. And one of the great protests is trying to mobilize our politicians now to realize what is going on. It sounds to me like in this PMO committee, this strategic planning committee, that there were about 30% of people in that group that disagreed with what was going on. Well, if that is so, where are they? Where is the author of this letter? That these people are there, they're disagreeing with the government, so why aren't they voting with their feet? Why aren't they leaving at least the caucus, moving out, maybe out of the Liberal Party, becoming independents, becoming some other party in the House? Why are they not abandoning the Liberals? Are their own self-interests outweighing the interests of millions of Canadians? I think what people have to do, and this is where I have come out of the closet myself, no longer Malcolm Carter, but Robert Malcolm McCarter. I have to come out and maybe bear some slings and arrows. These people have to, too. They have to come out. They have to tell us what is going on, what is going wrong, and why they have to abandon their own party. That has to be there. If failing the Liberals doing that because their own greed and self-interest is keeping them in place and keeping them quiet, then we must work on the NDP. How many NDP people are happy with Jagmeet Singh so supporting the Liberals that when I meet people like I did at the protests that said, never again will they vote for the NDP. Never again. They have betrayed them. And as far as I can tell, they have. They have betrayed them. Oh, yes, dental plan. No, they have betrayed the working people of this country by joining with the Liberals, by allowing the Liberals to pursue these courses of actions which are undermining the rights and freedoms of Canadians.
Mm-hmm. And you write here, you say, history remembers those who are brave enough to make the difficult decisions that put the welfare of thousands of others above their own interests. History forgets those who dither, were too cowardly to make a stand against forces they know to be evil. So you're saying be someone that history will remember, make a difference. Yeah. That's what your message is.
Oh, I mean, it's not about me, it's about my grandchildren. I mean, right. I'm long in the tooth, right? What world are we leaving to our kids? You want one where they can't own their own house, where someone else owns it and rents them, someone else decides what trips they're going to go on or not. If they talk out against some failings of government, they are going to be blackballed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's not the world I want for my children, and yet it seems to be the world that we are pushing towards.
Well, hopefully you are right in diagnosing the problem. And I also, I pray that you're correct, that all this can be resisted and that there's a better future for Canada. I certainly believe it. I don't think that those who are pushing this agenda, their 20 to 40 year agenda, I don't think that they're going to win. I think there are too many good Canadians in this country who will resist it. I may be wrong, but I don't think that I am.
If I can interject, I am shocked, appalled at how quiet the Canadians are, and how I just finished reading Pierre Burton's book on Vimy Ridge,
mm-hmm.
and those Canadians were not today's Canadians. Those Canadians, they were an awful tough lot,
mm-hmm.
okay, a powerful lot, a free lot, a generous lot, a lot that thought of others and gave up their lives for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I see what's going on now, people seem to be so embedded in their own beliefs and needs that they aren't looking beyond that. I am afraid for Canada right now.
Well, I have to say I quite agree with you. I think we know, those of us who understand and have an appreciation of what's going on, know that that is something that is essential. We need new leadership in this country. And I pray that it comes. But Bob, I want to thank you for being with us today and being so honest in your revelations and your opinions about them. This is the part of the program that you'll probably like. I think you've already given us one reading selection, but this part of the program, we close off with something called the reading list, where you get to choose a couple of selections that you think you'd recommend to people who are listening to this podcast. I've got one or two that I'm going to provide, and then I'm going to ask you to give yours and sort of give you the last word. One of the books that I'm recommending today is called Apocalypse Never, Why Environmental Alarmism Hurts Us All by Michael Schellenberger. This book, Michael Schellenberger has been fighting for a greener planet for decades. And this is part of the reason why I chose this book. He helped to save the world's last unprotected redwoods, and he co-created the predecessor to today's Green New Deal. And he led a successful effort by climate scientists and activists to keep nuclear plants operating, preventing a spike of emissions. But in 2019, he had a revelation. And he's now saying that despite decades of news media attention, many remain ignorant of basic facts. Carbon emissions peaked and have been declining in most developed nations for over a decade. Deaths from extreme weather, even in poor nations, declined 80% over the last four decades. And the risk of Earth warming to very high temperatures is increasingly unlikely thanks to slowing population growth and abundant natural gases, our guest has been saying. Curiously, the people who are the most alarmist about the problems also tend to oppose the obvious solutions. And so he asked the question, what's really behind the rise of apocalyptic environmentalism? And the answer is, he discovers there are powerful financial interests. These are desires for status and power. And most of all, there's desire among supposedly secular people for transcendent. This is transcendence. It's a spiritual impulse he's talking about. So this is a very fascinating book that raises a lot of the points that our guest has been raising today, but it goes into them in more detail. The second book is from Dr. Patrick Moore, a Canadian, who's published a book called Fake Invisible Catastrophes and Threats of Doom. Well, the title kind of gives it away, but essentially what this book does is it debunks every very clear, unabashed language. And and it's copiously documented, but it takes apart every single doomsday myth about the environment and environmental catastrophe that has been spun over the past few decades. And he basically says that actually what's happening is we need not be very concerned about CO2. The Earth needs more CO2. And he even says something that to some people might seem incredibly crazy, that were it not for the discovery of oil and the use of petrochemicals and burning them, that we might be in a really severe CO2 detriment situation, deficiency situation. And you can say, well, you can, that is, you know, that's myth. However, remember that the man is a scientist and he's devoted his life to the study of such topics. So we shouldn't dismiss what Dr. Patrick Moore says out of hand in favor of what, Robert Redford or Leonardo DiCaprio are telling us about the environment. So it's a wonderful book, very readable. I think people will really, really enjoy that, if only to learn more about, you know, the real science. What I would suggest is the real science of the environmental catastrophes. He even goes into discussing things like, do we really need to be worried about polar bears disappearing from the face of the earth? There's a story about that one too. So anyway, Bob, those are my two books. I wonder, you've already mentioned one, that book about Vimy Ridge, which I have not yet read. I really enjoy the work of Pierre Burton, really a wonderful Canadian historian. But are there others that you would recommend to people listening to this podcast?
Michael Schellenberger is, because he's become an environmentalist that has switched over to nuclear, a friend of mine and I, we've been lobbying for nuclear for some years now. We've been off to political campaigns and wearing our pro-nuclear shirts. I really think it is one of the long-term solutions. Short-term, like we're looking at 100 years of petroleum and so on, we have to have. But long-term, I think nuclear is the way. And I don't think I'd wait for fusion. I really, that's a bit of a, we just cannot take the chance that fusion will work. We already know the other does work. Pat Moore, a long-term biologist. Well, I was a biologist too, a trained biologist. And I remember my classes back then when they talked about we're at a CO2 deficit in the world, and that plants are having to work very hard to get CO2. In fact, they developed a whole different metabolism system that, of which the details elude me, but fixing CO2 out of the air, that they had to develop a new system just so they could draw the CO2 down, get more use of that CO2. In long past times, there were much, much higher CO2 levels in the atmosphere, and they also coincide with bountiful life on Earth. Can cause warming because it does act as a heat blanket, but the effect is actually fairly small with the numbers that we've got right now. 0.04% of the atmosphere is very small. Mm-hmm. I agree with both of those fellows. They're both quite astute in what they say. Mm-hmm. Vimy is very different. It's a historical book. It's written by Pierre Burton. And it's 1984, so you might have to pick it up at the used bookstore. Maybe it's probably online. And an excellent read from a historical Canadian point of view. Gives you a flavor of what Canadians were like in that First World War and prior to that First World War. And it gives you some idea about really the birth of pride in Canada. And one of those things that I would like to say about that pride in Canada is that this is another thing that I'm having difficulty with the Trudeau government for. They're working very hard to take away our pride in our country. Mm-hmm. They are finding horrors that we've done in the past, which I didn't do, you didn't do. In fact, I'm not sure who did, maybe a very limited number of people, okay? I used to have a friend who was the head of the residential school in Port Alberni. He was the headmaster of the residential school. Lovely fellow. I asked him, were you worried about, because things have been happening in Alberta, were you worried about of concerns about your own school, like what was happening in Alberta where they were bringing up all the abuse that had happened there? And they said, oh, no, it was a really well-run school. The kids all very happy and had such wonderful times there. And then they uncovered that there had been a pedophile in the works, and my friend John was called up several times apparently to give testimony, and from a very vigorous 76-year-old when I was talking to him, he died within a couple of years of, I think, shame.
Hmm.
These stories, yes, there were tragedies. Yeah, there were. But Canadians on their whole, are very open, very generous people. Okay? Not all, but very much so. You have every reason to be proud of being Canadian, and you must be proud, because to undermine it is to undermine our very country.
Bob, I just wanted to thank you again for being our special guest today. It's been a real pleasure having you on the program. Thanks for your courage and your honesty and for your opinions. I'm sure that they will confirm many that your fellow conspiracy theorists out there already share. But also, I mean, it'll also corroborate. Yes, it'll corroborate a lot of, I think a lot of what you have said back and what you heard back in 2019, as you quite rightly point out, has been corroborated.
It's corroborated
by subsequent events. Yes, yes, yes. And so we must be aware, we must be vigilant as well.
Well, we must know that it was a plan, a long-term plan. It is not happenstance. This is all plotted out by global forces, not just Canadian forces. It's far too coincidental that the same game plan is playing out across the world. I'm presently working on an article about how COVID itself, the numbers of COVID, were abused. I publish in, I'll just give it a little plug to my own website. It's
please do.
psicoca.com, psicoca.com, stands for Science Concepts Canada.com. And I just publish whatever I come across, whatever wacko conspiracy. No, I try to stay away from conspiracy theory. And where I put in my own opinions, I dive into the facts, maybe too much for some. I do a lot of spreadsheet analysis, and I try to make sure that what I'm saying is true. Try to make sure. I am not always right on, but I get awfully close.
In my view, that would disqualify you as a leftist, Bob. But thank you. We're going to have your website as the link to this program. Thank you so much for being our special guest. It's been a real pleasure.
I disqualified myself as a left.
All right. Thanks very much, Bob, for being our special guest today.
It's very good to talk to you, Leighton.
Okay. Take care.